Death isn't frightening when weighed against an insignificant existence.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the updates you really want on whether or not you should read that book people keep talking about on Book Talk. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. So today we are bringing you a real Book Talk baddie. This one is everywhere. And I picked it up because someone said, hey, if you're in ACOTAR slump, this girl's writing these books right now to get fans through. And I was like, say less. And I convinced the other two to read it too. So we are reading The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. And this is a fantasy, and it takes place in the world of vampires. There's some like different nations of vampires, different races of vampires. And then there's our main character, Araya, who's a human living in a castle under the protection of the vampire king. And so she's just kind of like this damsel in a tower, like avoiding other vampires until she gets this opportunity to enter this massive competition that grants you one wish from a goddess if you win. So it goes on, you know, feels kind of Hunger Games-y. There's some like slow burn enemies to lovers romance and a lot of action. And that's where I'll leave it for now.
And smexy vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I am so excited. Caitlin and Catherine both read this book before me, and my mom actually read it before all of us and recommended it, and it has now become my new personality. I'm obsessed with it. Also, is the main character's name Araya or Araya?
I was saying Araya. I have no idea.
I was saying Araya, but I don't know what it is.
I was saying Araya as well, but Araya sounds good too. I don't know.
Whatever you're feeling, whatever comes out of your mouth, we'll go with it for now. This fan base is too new to persecute us.
That's so true. Okay, well, we're going to talk about reviews, and I want to read mine first because mine is really long, but it's worth it. It's also kind of a cop-out. It's one of the most liked reviews on Goodreads, but it's so funny, and I also completely agree, so I'm going to read it. It is 5 stars from reader Amen. Convinced nothing could top this masterpiece. The second I opened up page one, I couldn't put this book down. My eyes were gorilla glued to the pages. I knew I'd enjoy the book, but I didn't know I'd love it to the point of actually considering how I could cement it into my brain and body. How I could cement it into my brain, skin, and body. This was the Hunger Games meets Underworld. From the world building to the lush writing, nothing was amiss in my eyes. From characters I'd literally move continents for to a slow burn romance that ached me to my core, the plot was giving as much as the romance, and we got enough of both. Araya, female rage incarnated to the max. She's so effortlessly fierce, badass, and strong. Usually battle fight scenes bore me, but it's the way I couldn't get enough of it when she was involved. She deserves the world, and I'll gladly kneel before her. Then the name of the romance, who I'm not going to say, even though it's obvious. I still want him till I'm diagnosed with severe spine and back problems. But I gotta say, my favorite part about this book was the plot over the romance. I was so entranced in the writing and the world building that I could clearly imagine every corner, inch, and cobblestone of the world and its kingdoms. And oh my god, damn, those last 30 pages. You could have a gun to my head and I wouldn't have guessed the way things ended. I was shocked to say the least. My brain must have paralyzed entirely at some point. I lost all mobile function. I finished this book breathing hard and staring at the walls for like 20 minutes, processing the intense shit I just read. Carissa Broadbent, count your fucking days because my therapist and lawyer say I'm entitled to emotional compensation. They'll be in contact.
Wait, okay. I have to read mine because it had a matching line.
Oh my god.
Storygraph user KChandler13. 5 stars. Wow, I finished this book and stared at a wall for 20 minutes thinking, did that really just happen? Immediately downloading book two. So we're all staring at walls, I guess.
I had to do it. This book had me processing. This book had me like on my hands and knees crawling. Like I was begging this author like to give me more because it was that good.
I did have a bonus, a 4.5 star review. I want to smash rain.
Yep. Period. Well, I have two reviews as well, and they're from complete opposite sides of the spectrum. So I will bring in the negative reviews.
You're brave. I know. Go one star because I was too.
I like didn't find them.
I'll try. I have a feeling y'all are about to get feral. So that's what I'll preface with it. So Erin, and I'm not going to say her last name, even though it's included. One star review on Goodreads. I might be outgrowing this genre. Do you like piss poor world building, a protagonist who's a blatant ripoff of Feyre, Aelin, and Katniss, and a love interest who is worst plagiarized Castiel with shades of Rhys? Do you want a plot that makes no sense, side characters with vague goals and convenient motivations that make no sense? How about prose that is so self-congratulatory, overly flowery, non-specific, and although it's written first person, in no way matches the protagonist's dialogue voice? Then, oh boy, do I have the book for you. Listen, I'll be the first to admit that ACOTAR has problems and some of the writing is underdeveloped. But SJM at least understood how to lay breadcrumbs through action in her story, so the reveals had some actual weight. This author so obviously wanted to do that, but has zero understanding of craft and story structure, so it falls laughably flat. I don't think self-publishing is always a red flag. There are exceptions, but sometimes you need an editor. Hot girl with a knife is not a character. Hot guy who's mean but also sensitive is not a character. Call me a stickler, but your characters should have specific objectives, motivations, and nuance to feel alive. Not just tonal choices that fit an aesthetic. Also, you can see the reveal she's attempting to set up with Septimus from 1,000 miles away. Borderline plagiarism of Acomat.
Not even the reveal.
I know. Borderline plagiarism of Accordamist and Fury, incoming. I guarantee it. Throwing tomatoes for the rest of my life at this book. And there's five more. Ah ha 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 ha, Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm so mad. Every character actually has very clear objectives.
They do. And also, like, you just came after the whole fantasy genre because the main character and the main love interest are, like, the same in every fantasy book. Like,
also, if you say a character is a combination of three to four characters, that means they're not a ripoff of one character because they combined elements of four different characters. That's legal. That's just called making a different person.
Yeah.
And you, like, take elements of four different characters, that's a different character.
Well, I think it's so interesting when people are like, be more original. And I'm like, you do realize all art is plagiarism off of previous art. Like, that's how that works.
This,
I also don't want to sit here and pick apart this review because it doesn't deserve our attention.
So true.
I will say, I went into it thinking this was supposed to be, you know, like ACOTAR to fill the void. It is not, like, at all.
No.
I but it did fill the void.
So much. Okay. This is my comment. Okay. So I do think the second book is borderline ACOTAR plagiarism. That is one of the reasons why I didn't like it as much. The first book is its own thing. And the way I would say it is that SJM writes fairy tales. They're surprising fairy tales. There are dark moments, but they're fairy tales. This book is like a dark fairy tale. It is like a grim fairy tale. It's a Hunger Games fairy tale. It's totally different than SJM, but it is clearly inspired by SJM. But taking empowered characters, well-written sex scenes that value female pleasure, like developing characters in a fantasy world is like, that's the way you're supposed to be inspired by other art. You are inspired by it and you make your own story that's different than plagiarism. So that's the end of my rant.
Also, I knew the self-published thing before I read it. And I was reading it thinking, hey, this is pretty good for self-published.
I was shocked it was self-published. I was like, most, because I'm personally very critical about, like, the art of writing. And so I will pick apart a book for, like, clearly not having an editor. I thought this book was very well written, like in some like very impactful lines, and just I thought it was honestly really good.
Yeah.
And we can get a couple of descriptions redundant, mm-hmm. which like Catherine's about to say, we can get into a few things later, but like,
right.
Anyway, read your other review to cheer us up.
Okay. Yes. We can get into everything later about the depth of this book, despite what this reviewer said. But I wanted to read a review that came straight from text message that later was put on Goodreads. And it's a 5-star review from our very own Casey Murray.
Oh, God.
It's on Goodreads. This book has terrorized my well-being and also broken my heart.
Yes.
And you texted it to us and then immediately put it on Goodreads. Yeah.
She also, it came with a photo of her in her bed with mascara running down her face and her dog attempting to comfort her because she was so sad.
I've never seen Casey like this.
This is my new favorite book. It had everything. If you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you guys already have a little bit of an idea of the things that make me go feral for a book. It's good writing, it's surprising plot twists, it's impressive character development, and it's morally complex characters that are forced to make hard decisions that get their hands dirty. This book takes it all to the max. I am obsessed with it. Like, I love it. So, yeah.
Well, you're not the only one who's
crushed me.
Yes, you're not the only one who was crushed. There was a lot of reviews saying that. But overall in Goodreads, it was a 4.5 out of 5. And then on Amazon, it was a 4.7 out of 5. So it is highly, highly rated. So what do y'all think? Do you agree with that? Should it be higher? Should it be lower?
I think that's all fair. I mean, personally, I gave it 5 stars because fantasy is my jam. And when you have pulled me along in the story like Carissa Bradmont did, I'm all in. You've got all my stars.
I also gave it 5 stars. It was such good pacing, such good writing. I did not predict the ending, which made it so much better.
Yeah.
Yes. It is a book that is exciting the entire way through and interesting the entire way through. And then just goes fucking wild in the last 30 pages and sets you up. This is like
530 pages, I think.
Yeah.
And like, it did not feel like it. We'll get to that in pacing, but
anyway. We devoured it. I devoured this book. So it's also 5 stars. I'd give it more if I could. I'd give it 6. I'd give it 10. I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah. To be fair, my time zone, your text came in at like 1 or 2 a.m. So I didn't respond until a lot later. And I was like, wow, she's staying up really late for this. But maybe it wasn't actually that late.
I think I stayed up till like midnight, my time to finish it. So yeah, we can get into it in pacing. But
I just stayed up till 1 a.m. to finish the second one this week.
Right. I told Catherine and Caitlin right before the podcast, I finished the first book in 2 days, finished the second book in 2 days, and am now rereading the first book. So get ready.
Oh, we broke her.
Yeah, I'm broken. I mean, yeah. I think I'm a very critical reader. And when I find something that really blows me away, it like turns me into like a different person. Like I've just become like an actual insane person. So
mom just like, I've been trying to tell you.
She, yeah, I texted her also the photo of me like crying and my dog Peaches trying to like make me feel better. And she was like, yes, like that's exactly how I felt at the end of that book. So right. She definitely relates.
Let's get into some of our softball questions so we can start our discussion before we spoil everything.
Yeah.
plot or character driven?
100% plot driven. Like, I liked the character development, but that is not the main crux of the story. It is the fantastic plot.
Exactly. It's all about the Kajari, which is totally out of everyone's control. They're all competing to the death to impress the goddess Nyaxia. And so, yeah, even though the character development is great, they're all like bound to the will of the Kajari.
I agree. I'll also say, I'm sure we'll do an episode on the second one because we all just destroyed it and it just came out. I will say, I feel like this one's more plot And the second one's more character, and I think she excels at plot.
We cannot talk about the second book because I have so much I want to say about it, and I'm going to go off if we don't like stop it here.
Right, coming soon. She does have other books outside of these two in the Crowns of Nyaxia series. Have you read them?
We've no. obviously read the second one of this book, but right. I don't think any of us have read anything else.
No,
there are some novellas in this series, so I'm guessing we'll all pick those up shortly.
Yes.
Daughter of No Worlds. Yeah, I did not know that she had written previous books.
That makes sense, because I feel like writers get better as they publish more. So to make kind of like this amazing book as a self-published author, you would have to have some previous experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the ratings. Let's see.
I read some reviews that said they liked this one much better than her other one. And then I read some that were like, it was good, but like, this is better.
Yeah, her other books do have good ratings. Serpent and the Wings of Night looks like it is the highest rated. But they all of them seem to be like fairly well rated.
I'd be curious.
Me too.
So we've alluded to, we all demolished this book. Pacing wise, I picked this up to slowly get into before I was going on a 10-hour plane ride, hoping I'd be into it enough for it to entertain me. And I finished it before I even left. So that was a two-sitting read over a weekend when I should have been packing, and I couldn't put it down.
Yep, I think this is a book that is a good example of perfect pacing. There's not a slow point in the book. There's consistently enough action that it's never slow, but there's also enough downtime to develop the relationships and neither drags on too long. There's the perfect number of characters to where it's never really confusing. Every character who is important gets developed to like a more full, more complex extent. Like there's nothing that's wasted or useless in this book.
Yeah. I'm gonna sound crazy again. And
she's crazy. Yeah, she is.
Yeah, I read it in 2 days. Caitlin read it in 2 days, and
Catherine read it in how many hours?
Well, I don't know exactly how many hours. I'll set the scene. Caitlin told me about this book right before our trip. So I downloaded it while we were in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And she had an earlier flight, and I went to the airport with her. And I had like an 8-hour layover, I think is what I counted. And I finished it before I even got on the plane and started it. So it was a one sitting read for me, but I couldn't tell you how long it took me. I think it took me 5 hours though.
Yeah, we got to the airport at like 2 a.m. in Buenos Aires, and these Argentinians are all sitting there drinking beers, and Catherine's like, sure, I'll sit down and join them and read this book.
Okay, I had my own table, and I got a coffee.
It was just like the atmosphere was hilarious, and Catherine's like, yeah, I'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I was totally chill. I had my book, I had my coffee, I had my table, we all good.
Yes. And for context, so the physical copy of the book, it's 482 pages. So it's not small. Like it's tall, it's thick. So Catherine is insane.
Well, and then so Catherine and I finished this one March and found out that the next one came out like April 4th. 14th. I think it was 14th. See, she remembers. And so we had to wait for the second book. And then I had to read a bunch of books for this podcast and was getting really mad because there was such a cliffhanger at the end of the first book. I was like, I need to read the second one right now. So I was very excited to finally read it. And we like all finished at the same time because Casey read them back to back because she didn't have to wait for it to come out.
Yes. That's part of why I'm just so feral. And I kind of planned it because people had recommended me this book so highly and everyone told me I would like it. Like, you know, my mom, Caitlin, Catherine, people who know my reading taste really well were like, you will love this. And so I was like, And my mom made it very clear that it's a cliffhanger and she's really excited for the second book. And so I purposefully waited until the second book was out just so I wouldn't have to wait. And it was a smart decision.
So there's your pacing summary.
Yeah. Would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
I would sell my soul to buy a ticket to watch a movie of this book.
I would. I'm telling you, this book has turned me into a fangirl. Like, I'll fucking dress up. Like, I don't care. I will do it all.
You have never said this for any book. Like, I'm shocked because you love ACOTAR and SJM, but you have never said that for that.
I do. I think we can get into it later. I do think, like, you know, the first person who does something always has it hardest because you have to, like, develop the tropes. You have to experiment the most. So you have more hit or miss. I do think Carissa Broadbent benefited from, like, studying SJM. So I think she managed to really nail this book partly because she was able to sort of, like, take the best of what SJM did and combine it with new elements and sort of minimize the flaws of other books.
And the timing. Oh. Ravenous fans waiting for SJM's next fantasy book.
Yeah, branding it that way was perfect. Like, I think Araya...
Marketing genius.
Yes. I think
Araya... I also saw a lot of comparisons to Of Blood and Ash and a lot of Hunger Games mentions.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one Twilight mention.
It's just this great, like, fantasy swirl. Like, I just really feel like you can tell that Carissa Broadbent is, like, a student of the genre and has really put work into, like, actually, like, thinking about what makes a book good, like, what makes a character, what makes you root for them, what makes someone complicated but you root for them, like, and so that's part of why this book is so good, is because she really took the strengths of all the other books and, like, minimized their weaknesses. And so I'm an insane person. Like, I've been trying to get my friends in Sacramento to read this book, even though they're, like, not into books or fantasy like this. I'm, like, trying to drag everybody into it. I'm like, come on.
Oh God, we've started a new cult.
Yeah.
Got two now.
Right.
But yeah, I would definitely watch. I think a movie would be great for this. I mean, I would see it in theaters, and I never see things in theaters because I freaking hate movie theaters, but I would see it in theaters.
That's what I'm like. I'll go to a premiere. I'll wait in line. Like, I never care that much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let Casey go first on busy girl writing.
It's a busy girl 5 for me. Thank you. I can justify it for reasons that have nothing to do with my insane obsession. It's like we've said, the pacing is great. The chapters are all a pretty good length, so it's fairly easy to pick up and put down if you're short on time. But it's also so good that it doesn't matter how busy you are, you're going to make time to read it. So,
I mean, I kind of have to give it a busy girl's 5 if I read it in one sitting in an airport. But yeah, same exact thing that Casey said. It is such a quick read that you will make time for it, essentially. And despite the length of it, it's totally worth it.
Yeah. I'll give it a 5. Unless you're not in the fantasy, and then you probably won't, like, speed through it. But if you, in general, like the fantasy genre and, like, a little bit of spicy romance mixed in, like, it's so easy to pick up and put down. And like they said, you won't want to. And it just reads so smoothly. I cannot say it enough. Like, so smoothly.
I also want to mention, I totally forgot about this. I was really skeptical of this book because it's a vampire series and vampires are my least favorite, like, mythical creature to, like, base a lore off of. I normally find it really cheesy, and not just because of Twilight, but I find the whole, like, history of vampires, lore of vampires, and the fantasy that's been done about them just always really cliche and gross. And so I really did not think I would like this book, partly for that reason. But she did a good job with it. I feel like she managed to make it, like, its own. You know, it wasn't a total copy of other vampire lore, but it kind of took the basics and, like, made it a good, like, basis of a fantasy novel. So
I think what makes this one good is they're not trying to set it in the current world. Like a Twilight of Vampire Diaries is trying to set it in like present day. And it's always a 1,000-year-old man meets a 16-year-old who doesn't know her life and doesn't know what to do with her life. And like, yes, this one does kind of hit on that trope where he's like a lot older than her, the hundreds of years older, which could be problematic. Totally understand that. That's a critique that it's valid. But because it's set in a fantasy world and you're not basing it into some like weird abstract 2023 like world where vampires exist, you don't have to like, you can suspend reality a lot more, because like that's where I think Twilight fails and like Vampire Diaries fails, in my opinion, is because you're trying to set it in present times. And that's where like you make some weird justifications and rules for vampires. Yeah. And I'm like, no, just make it a mythical world where there's some vampire hierarchy and gods and goddesses. And like, I'm on board.
I was just going to say to that point, I also think a lot of authors really fumble with like the, how do we combine human and vampire societies into one, like one cohesive society? And I think this author's answer to that question was a lot better than others that I've read. So the world felt very real despite the vampire human dynamic.
I sort of think a lot of times vampires are only brought in as a romantic thing in stories, and this was more about the plot, like way more about the plot. And yes, I was very grateful for that.
Like, replace vampire with any other mythical being and you get the same result of this book.
Or, like, it could have been humans. I don't know. Like,
yeah, superhumans. Okay, well, I think that brings us to the spoiler alert section.
Ooh.
I'm so excited. Don't spoil this book for you. Like we've said, the ending is crazy. Don't spoil it for yourself. Go on blind. And then come back.
If you're an Agatar fan, picture Crescent City 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Twist on twist on twist. You're begging for mercy. You're on your knees.
You're sitting there with your mouth dropped, staring at a wall at the end.
You're crying.
Wondering what you're... No, you're not crying.
I was crying.
Casey was crying.
Okay. So I think our first question is about, you know, the world building. Did you like the world building?
I saw some criticisms that I felt a little similarly of, was that it jumped in really aggressively to the vampire hierarchy stuff. Like, it took me a hot minute to figure out that the Rishan and the Hiage were part of one house and weren't like mixed in with, like, there was a House of Shadows, House of Night, House of, and then the Bloodborne. I was like, whoa, 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 who belongs to what house? And I felt like it needed to start with just the House of Night and then explain that and then build out. But then you got it eventually and it wasn't a big deal. It just could have been better set up. Otherwise, I think the world building was lovely. I have this beautiful picture of, I'm not going to try and say the name of the capital city, but I have this beautiful picture of it in my head and can see it and see the vampires prowling the dark streets and like the human slums. And I thought it was lovely. Well, not lovely. It was dark, but, you know, her work was lovely.
Yeah, I found this personally. The vampire thing didn't bother me. I felt like I adapted to it fairly quickly, but I also did love that I think this book is the perfect amount of visual. Like, I could see everything really clearly. It felt really real. But she also didn't spend too much time describing everything, because, you know, sometimes you just really get bogged down in the visual descriptions and it just kind of makes the book kind of clunky. But so I think that she did that really well.
You didn't really notice things were being described to you, just kind of like,
yes, it was like very well like spursed in. I also want to point out, I loved the lore of Nyaxia. I think that she is like an incredibly complicated villain in the story. And I loved how much more you learn about her and her story and journey to power, because she's created vampires. Vampires are her children. And so I love learning more and more about her, because she also kind of becomes a character in the story that you both love and hate. And I think that's just so interesting. And I really liked that part.
Yeah. I do have a critique of the book, and it's not a bad critique. It's just like, because I'm spoiled with SJM, I think it's an easy comparison to be made just because it's so obviously heavily influenced by SJM. I think this book does a really good job of character descriptions and like their physical attributes, their personality attributes. You get really, really in depth of like the color of their rings, tells their power rankings. You get really like their height, their hair color, their length. But I feel like the world isn't as developed as like an SJM level book, where I don't totally see like the streets. I don't see the city or the world per se, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, I'm spoiled. What I did love was the mythology, like y'all said. I think that's where this book runs and does an amazing job, is that I'm a Percy Jackson gal. I love a good Greek mythology basis book, or any sort of like polytheistic system of gods. And I love that the gods actually are interacting with characters and not just this like omnipresent kind of thing that never shows up that people just pray to. I loved that there was like this hierarchy in gods, and you heard their backstories and how they became gods, and like that they come down from the heavens and grant wishes essentially, but also fuck things up pretty regularly. And like, it's like, it's not like this all powerful beings. It's not these all good beings. They're very complicated beings, and people recognize that. That's where I loved this book.
I do want to debate you on one point. That I feel like you walked yourself into a corner here. You can let me know. You were saying that comparing it to ACOTAR, you know, you feel like you got much more of the world in ACOTAR than you got in this book. I feel like in this book, you can see like the city fairly well, but you're right. You don't get the rest of like the world into context so far. But when you read the first ACOTAR book, you're in like Tamlin's stupid spring core, and you don't know anything else about Prithian until like the next book. So you're comparing like five books to one.
Okay. Yes, I totally agree. That's totally valid. Maybe this book could have done with a map at the beginning of it, to you seeing the whole world. And maybe that's just like a quick visual. Maybe it does. And I have like, I only had the Kindle version.
I think I saw it in the Kindle version. There's definitely one in the hard copy.
Oh, dang. Well, I'm just blind. sorry, but yeah, no, I would say, because this doesn't have like that fairy tale basis that SJM has, like I needed a little bit more of like descriptions of the city. Like I get where you're saying, like you felt like you knew the city pretty well. I didn't necessarily feel like I knew the city super well, but I knew the characters super well. Maybe that's like an unfair criticism, but that's just what I thought.
All right. Some differing perspectives here, but I want to move on to the next question. The story follows a human girl rescued by the Vampire King. And then the reason that she's entering the Qajari is to get a wish that sort of allows her to like ascend to the same power as her Vampire King dad, who is extremely powerful. And you know, this Qajari is like the Hunger Games. It's like a battle to the death where there's one winner. What did you think of this whole plot? This like wish is like the driver of the plot and the trials.
I loved it. I kind of guessed that the ending, whatever the wish would be, wouldn't quite be what she went into it thinking of, but I still loved the structure of the games, how they followed the cycle. I said games. Here I am thinking Hunger Games. The trials, how they followed like the moon cycles, and how like it wasn't some like cutesy like riddle or something like an ACOTAR. Like they were like, I don't know, if this was a movie, you'd be like, oh my God, you know, like watching it. Like they were pretty intense, and I don't know. I love an action book. You know, I love an action book. The trials just kept coming and I loved them.
I think I can speak for all of us and say our favorite part of ACOTAR was the trials of Feyre in the Under the Mountain. So unsurprisingly, we really love the trials in this one. I just think they were, I liked that they were split up by months, and I liked that you had the like development of alliances in between and like that interaction between the contestants, because obviously only one can survive and they all know that and they're all fighting for a place, but at the same time they're kind of trying to get their best foot forward to win, and that means forming alliances and stabbing people in the back. And I really loved that political aspect of it, and I was so curious because I knew when she was like, I'm going to wish to have this link to my father or my adoptive father and gain his power and we can be co-rulers. I was like, you're going to be forever linked to this dude who's your dad. This sounds sexual, which I was like, this sounds gross, TBH. But also, I knew something was fishy there where I was like, I knew for a fact that wasn't going to be the end wish. Duh. But I knew that there was something fishy about the link between the two of them. I was like, to forever link yourself to a person means that you can't escape them. That's a problem.
I will say something else I found interesting is that there's no safety between the trials either. They're in this moon palace, secluded from everyone. She's a human in a house full of hungry vampires. Like, I liked that, you know, you weren't just chilling, waiting between the trials. Like, there was constant fear, constant motion, you know, constant building of alliances. I really enjoyed that it wasn't just like, trial, fun thing, trial, fun thing.
Right. I agree. You know, any book has like a certain level of predictability. Like, you know, Araya and Rain are going to make it to the finale, and you know, it's going to be between the two of them. You know that the wish is not going to go down the way Vincent thinks it's going to go down and Araya originally planned for it to go down. Like, you can tell those things are going to happen. So it's really like a kudos to the book that it still ends up being so surprising. And so, yeah, I love the plot. I don't know if I have a favorite trial because I actually really liked them all. I thought they were all interesting, all unique. Again, I loved the way they connected to Nyaxia's journey, and you kind of learn more about the lore and the system of the gods because of that. I thought that was really smart. So yeah, and I also did love the downtime because you get to learn a lot more about Vincent, who is one of my favorite characters and favorite villain question mark. This book, I love it so much because it has like three villains, and one of them's Nyaxia, one of them's Vincent, and one of them's Rain. And so I was like obsessed with that. I think Vincent is so complicated.
Well, none of them, you go back and forth on all of them, like, are you a villain?
Yeah, but they're all three the villain and not the villain, which is so hard to create and pull off. And so
some of them are the also, anti-hero.
Also to Araya, like, everybody's out to kill her, so.
Yeah.
Like, I love that they didn't fetishize vampires in the sense of, like, oh my god, they're gonna bite me on the neck and it's gonna be so, like, pleasurable. No, she was genuinely afraid because she was sexually assaulted and physically assaulted by a previous boyfriend that her first time he lost control and tried to kill her because he has urges because this is his food source, is humans. And I, like, that this sounds creepy that I love that backstory, but I love that we didn't make it like where it's like this sexy, beautiful thing. Like, no, it's very dangerous to live in this world, and vampires are animals. They're
and there were the bloodvenders and who were kind of like addicts to vampire venom, but they're like very frowned upon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all die.
Yeah. Wow. I thought it was super interesting. Yeah, so good lore. I agree. I think that's also why I liked the vampires in this book, is because I think the other books just take it a little too far with, like, they're so sexy and like, oh my god, my exposed neck. And it's just like eye roll, eye roll, eye roll. I will still say, though, I will never get used to the blood drinking aspect of the sexy scenes in this book. Those were a little too far for me. They're too far for me in this book, and they're way too far for me in the second book. But that's the one thing I kind of don't like.
You guys both brought up Vincent. Catherine, you said wanting the Coriat to spawn with him was weird. And then Casey, you're like, he's my favorite character. Bond between Araya and Vincent. Araya's Vincent's little serpent. And you're kind of like the whole time, she's trying to figure out, like, why did he take me in and let me live and all this stuff? But, like, she loves him for that. It's a very complicated relationship. What are your thoughts on that relationship?
Don't get me wrong. I loved him. I just thought it was weird. I predicted in a sense that, there was an ulterior motive to wanting that bond because it was his idea, not hers, about that wish. So, but I loved his complexity and the fact that he is a villain to everyone else but her.
Mm-hmm. I love him so much because he has so many good parts to him and also so many bad parts to him. And like, you can love him because he's not the worst of vampires, but he's also not a revolutionary in any sense. Like, he's not trying to fix vampire society. He's part of it. And so, and he loves Araya so much, and you can feel it all the time. Like, their interactions are perfectly written for that tension where, like, he loves her and cares about her so much, but he also is clearly keeping things from her. And they explore this a lot in book two, but he's also like kind of afraid of her because like it's this huge thing in vampire society where vampires' children kill them to ascend power because they're immortal. So the only way for them to like actually take over their parents' power is to literally murder them. So that's an actual frequent occurrence. And so that is just also just a really interesting backdrop for their relationship, because even Vincent in his like desire to love Araya is also sort of like paralyzed by fear, and it keeps him from being, you know, what we would think is a good father, but he's like a way better father than like most in the vampire world. And he wants to protect her. He wants her to like do like, you know how to protect herself, but he also doesn't want her to like be as powerful as she could be. And so that tension is just so immaculate.
Well, and it talks about kind of going into that lore of power from your parents. It talks about the other guy in the Kahari that she knows, and Kajari, Kahari, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've been seeing it different ways in my head the whole time.
Every time I see it, I'm like,
yeah. Like, the parents have clipped his wings and pulled out his fangs because they want to have their kid, but they don't want the kid to take their power, which is why he's kind of entered this competition, is to have some power in his life at all. And if not, just go down trying. And you feel bad for him, but then you're kind of realizing as it goes on that Vincent, in a way, has clipped Araya's rings by keeping her in the castle. And so very protected, like she's grateful for the protection, but also like maybe it's too much. And it's like very confusing, complicated, and very real. I just really liked, like, no parent-child relationship is perfectly simple. Most aren't this complicated, but I feel like it was realistic.
I agree, I want to preface by saying I'm not saying Vincent is anything like my dad, but I feel like you can see parts of like a father-daughter dynamic that are actually very relatable in the way they speak to each other. Like, and so I think that's part of why this book made me cry, is like, I like parts of their relationship actually touched me emotionally. Like, I really felt it, and the love, but also like the not being able to, I guess the theme of like words left unsaid, like it's just, and the difficulty being vulnerable, and it was so raw. I mean, it really was.
Yeah. Vincent is both scared of her, scared for her, and is really trying to be a good father where there aren't really any good fathers in this world. Like, he learned from his father who murdered his little brother when he was born. And then he murdered his entire family just to make sure that no one could ascend to his throne. So he has no good basis of role model. And like, he just is keeping her in a gilded cage, but at the same time is trying to help her get this power. But it's a power that would make her equal to him, but not able to defy him.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like in it's either the last or the second to last trial. It describes like she's like about, she's like seriously injured, about to die, and it describes him like jumping to his feet to see what's happening to her, and like you feel his like fatherly concern for her. Like the mask of the ruler melts away because he's concerned about his daughter. And you just get those little glimpses, but they're so perfectly described that you like feel them.
Yeah, they really touch you.
And there's a lot of foreshadowing in those, because then they say like he'll look back on this as the moment where things went wrong, or like, so you knew something bad was truly going to happen to him throughout it.
Right. And also I do want to comment too, Araya kind of becomes more and more powerful as the Kajari goes on. And at first you're not really sure why. And then you start realizing like, maybe it's because Vincent was like intentionally not actually helping her access all of her power on purpose. And so that was also very interesting. Like, I mean, we don't need to be redundant, like we've said it before, but that like tension between wanting someone to be the best they can be, being so proud of them and wanting them to succeed, but also not wanting them to have the power to actually overtake you, is just such like an interesting dynamic in the context of love.
Okay, enough of Vincent. Let's talk about Rain. Rain is this rogue Rishan vampire who enters the Kajari. He's like massive and really sexy, and he ends up kind of helping her out the first night, and then kind of keeps trying to help her out, and she's like, no, get away from me. And then they have to make alliances for one of the things. He's like, let's be an alliance. She's like, I'd rather die. And then she is dying, and she's like, okay. So, and you know, it's reluctant lovers, enemy to lovers, and I love it. It was the best slow burn. Ugh.
I also loved it. Their romance had me in by the throat. I was like sitting in the palm of Carissa Broadbent's hand. I loved it. I loved like the forbidden romance, like that, the reluctance, the enemies, the slow winning of trust was so beautiful. Like, you know, this is where I see him being inspired by SJM, is like he has those same characteristics of being really patient, being trustworthy, being, you know, always getting like consent, like not just sexually, but also just in, you know, Araya being close to him, Araya like having to depend on him, being vulnerable with him. And it was just a really beautiful like development.
Well, and they both know that only one of them can survive. And they fall anyway. And then it becomes a who's going to sacrifice for who kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it tears you to bits because you got this slow burn and you know it's going to end. Mm-hmm. And like it has to. And so
slow burn with a little satisfaction and then a terrible heartbreak. That's kind of this one. But oh, you know, I love a bad boy with the heart of gold. That's like the trope that I love most. And a good slow burn romance also hits me in the feels. So like Rain is one of... goes in my list of perfect men.
So while we're on this point, I want to skip ahead to like the very end, just because I want to address it while we're talking about this point. So the ending is Rain kind of sacrifices himself and like basically like lets Araya kill him to win the Kajari.
Makes her
essentially. Like he doesn't just sacrifice him, like he virtually kills himself through Araya. Then Araya's wish is to, like, she asks Nyaxia, like, I wish Rain had won instead. Then we find out that Rain is the heir of the rival Nightborn clan, and he wishes for Vincent's power to be capped the same way Vincent had initially taken control 200 years earlier. Then Rain kills Vincent. Araya is sobbing over his dying body. And then we realize that Araya is the heir of her own Nightborn clan. Brutal. This is why I cried. The death of Vincent hit me so hard. And Rain's blatant betrayal of Araya hit me so hard that it actually felt like a knife in my chest. Like it broke my heart because I had fallen so in love with him and I was so crushed. And
it was gruesome. Like
it was.
It wasn't just like, and he slit his throat. It's like, and he pulverized every bone in his body until he was a pile of flesh telling Araya he loved her. Like, it's disgusting.
And okay, I do want to say, This is another perfect like redeeming moment for Vincent is that like Vincent's last words are like, so, like in the end, so many regrets, but never you. And that's like, so to me, that was like the ultimate I love you, because mm-hmm. Vincent was so married to power. And he knows at this point that Araya has, you know, accidentally caused his death and has caused him to lose power, has caused him to lose his life. And he's basically telling her, even knowing all this happened, like, I don't regret you. I still love you. And that just fucking wrenched my heart out. And then I was pissed because this is another point that we can talk about a lot in book two, but the fact that Rain still chose that wish after what Araya had done, after what he had done, broke my heart. And so I was angry. I was sad. I was a disaster. What did you guys think of that moment?
I also was stunned. Didn't know what to think in the exact moment.
Mm-hmm.
Was sad. But then he's like, and guess what? You have to marry me or die. And I was like, what? Like, yeah. What? That's the part that I was like, no. Like,
mm-hmm.
I understood why, but I didn't want it. And also, like, she could have avoided the whole thing by just saying, I wish he didn't die. And then they all did it for nothing, I guess. But, like, he was trying to save a people that didn't even want him. And anyway,
I'll add this, my last salty point. Rain didn't even want to join the Qajari. He was forced into it by Mish. Then he didn't even want to win. Then he still, in the end, after betraying Araya, kills her dad and takes over the throne.
Okay. I will give Rain this. I was very mad at him at the end of this book, but I'll give him this. He didn't necessarily want to make that wish. He was very much forced into it.
He should have made a different one.
But he was
up a million wishes.
There were
he
options.
He could have wished for Araya to be power.
I don't think there were options because he was forced his hand because he made a blood debt with a blood vampire, bloodborn. So he really couldn't make that, or else he would have faced worse consequences for that. But
well,
I know.
Anyway, if someone murdered my father in front of the entire kingdom and then said, guess what, honey, you gotta marry me, I probably would have, I don't know.
I was really mad at him because he was just like, it's for your protection. And I'm just like, fuck off. You just murdered her father, who, even though she had a complicated relationship with and was very mad at that moment, doesn't mean that like immediately she's going to jump into a marriage because you're saving her. It's like, she also doesn't need saving.
You're heartbroken too, because you're in love with Rain and now he's like the villain.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no.
And I knew this would have been complicated, but I really felt if his plan was to sacrifice himself, he should have just told her the truth so that she would have understood what was happening, you know, because that's the crux of it, is like, if he had just told her the truth, they could have just fucking killed each other. And like, she probably would have just accepted his death.
He could have pulled the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I will say this, the whole time I was like, there's three possible endings to this novel. They Hunger Games it and they both manage to survive. Araya wins and uses her wish to resuscitate Rain somehow. Araya wins and wishes for something. So Rain stays dead, but it's probably not the Coriatis bond, but wishes for something. So my ideal was that Rain would stay dead, because I think it's a cop-out to resuscitate characters from death. But she managed to do it in a way that was so painful and surprising that I was like, this is not a cop-out. This is fucking amazing. And she took this book to 8 different levels that I did not even anticipate it could reach.
Well, it was amazing, but it was painful to read.
Yeah. I will say, and I'll give this kind of disclaimer for me, at least in my reading experience, I kind of knew that Rain was going to be a very powerful heir almost, because
it talks about his red feathers.
That's what I was going to say, is he talks about his red feathers. And I'm like, okay, he has to be the Rishan heir. Like, he just has to be.
She revealed that way too early.
Yeah. Because that was like the first description of him from across the room. But what I did not expect was that wish to be chosen in that way to then him wish to murder base, to be take power and murder her father and then force her into marriage. That's the part I didn't get.
And Nyaxia's like understanding it before Aurea understands it. Like, it was just written so perfectly. I also agree. The whole time I was reading it, I was like, if his wings are red, doesn't that mean he's the heir? But I wasn't sure enough. I was like, is it just because his hair is red? I was like confused, because maybe that's
why his hair and eyes are red, is to throw you off.
Yeah, because maybe that's my critique of the world building, is the rules weren't clear enough, and it seemed like they weren't clear on that instance specifically, so you weren't sure that he was the heir. Because he also had Asteris, and I was like, who is this guy? But I was just, this is my thing that happens to me in books too, is if I love the book enough, I will be so pulled into the story that I stop guessing. If I don't like the book, I can immediately see how it's going to end, because I'm always thinking ahead. But this book had me like in a fucking chokehold. So
before we move on, you mentioned, you said Misha. I've been saying Misha once again. I have no idea. Who can we talk about how she is the heart and soul of this book? I love her.
She is. I was afraid for her the whole time, because those happy-go-lucky characters get killed off like fucking every book. And so the whole time I thought she was going to die. But I was like glad that she didn't die, because I loved her. I thought she was great. And now we know
she's like the catalyst for everything that happened, basically.
Yes. Which I kind of both love and hate her for.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes her also really complicated in a way that, also, spoiler, we can put out the sentence, I feel like book two doesn't really deal with.
That's what book three is for.
But I feel like her and Araya's relationship should have gotten a lot more complicated than it ended up getting. But whatever. But yeah, I loved her. She was beautiful, but you can always tell that there's this like hardcore, like amazing fighter, like revolutionary behind the mask. And so I found her really intriguing.
Well, I like that she wasn't quite as beholden to Nyaxia. She like worshipped a different god and had some powers from that. And like, you kind of got to see how other gods still sort of got a play in the vampire's world. Mm-hmm. And that added some complexity, which was kind of fun.
Yeah,
and she was just funny. She was sassy and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it brought in a whole other deity and a whole other power set. And I thought that was really fascinating.
Also, this is another little SJM wink. Araya, however you say it, has a really complicated relationship with her humanity. And the whole book is kind of like, is it a strength? Is it really a weakness to be human? Because the humans live their lives so differently, so more, much more empathetically, with so much more love. And so Araya really, through Rain, who used to be human. Also, that was so fucking obvious. I just want to say, that's like the only point I judged Araya, where I was like, she's like, these two vampires who are so different, like no vampires I've ever met before, they're turned. I can't believe it. I was like, girl, what do you mean? Like, it was like,
you don't.
The whole time.
It's like, let me prove it. I'll cook you a meal. And I was like, ooh, cabin scene?
Well, also, let me prove it. I'll cook you a meal. A vampire could learn to cook a meal.
Well, he was saying
a good one.
They're different. So if they're born a vampire, they won't understand how to make a meal good for humans.
Whatever.
Anyway, what did you guys think about her kind of struggle to accept her human side?
I loved the pacing of it. Like, I thought it was the perfect pace for her character growth, her dealing with that. Her kind of growing from I am weak because I am human and slowly gaining some confidence through the trials and kind of learning like maybe I'm not so weak. And then kind of at the end being like, I am, you know, strong, like I'm here at the end. And I really loved it. It wasn't cheesy. I was afraid it was going to be cheesy, and it wasn't. It was like real. Like, she still had doubts, but she was like getting there.
Yeah. And the fact that like she had this like very deep Nightfire power that she was like keeping a hold on, because she was told to be very fearful of the world. So she was never allowed to tap into like other emotions and other parts of herself for fear of being found out by vampires, or for fear of death, essentially, because that's kind of what her father instilled upon her. When she meets Misha.
Misha, that's what I was saying. So who knows?
I thought it was Mish, but I could be wrong.
I was saying Mish too.
So she helps her kind of almost tap into it, but she only can tap into it in like life or death situations, in deep fear, because that's the only emotion she's really cultivated in her life, really. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. And then also, like, I just like that, like, Rain was tapping into his humanity and saying, your humanity's a gift, don't waste it. And that's why he was really offended by the Bond wish that she wanted, because he was just like, why would you want to not be human? Because like, he was forced to be a vampire. Yeah. So it was a really interesting moment. And I think, yeah, definitely hint, hint, wink, wink, SJM.
I also really loved, as she sort of comes into her own and is starting to realize that she's a lot more powerful than she thought she was, and that like vampires are fallible beings, and like there is strength in what she can do, and she gets a lot more confidence. Nothing about her humanness changes, but vampires start treating her with a lot more respect. And so I loved watching that, because it also kind of reflected like, the reason you were prey is because you behaved like you were prey. When she came into her own power and stopped being afraid of them, and sort of accepted that she was also a very strong fighter that like couldn't be fucked with, the whole world around her just starts fearing her. And that I thought was a really like great aspect of like her growth, was seeing how it changed her reality.
I'm Googling pronunciations.
Oh my God. Are we finally going to get a pronunciation guide?
No, because it's doesn't have that following yet.
Okay. Well, correct us in the comments.
I got really distracted.
Well, maybe a viewer can tell us.
Yeah.
Or Carissa.
Oh, yeah, Carissa. It's
saved as a pinned story on her Instagram.
Wow, we're going deep.
I'll do a proper written pronunciation guide and include it in book two, though, since I know quite a few folks have asked for this.
Okay.
Sorry, I derailed that.
Final question. And I know I had book hangover from ACOTAR. And the reason why this writer wrote these books is because she was inspired by ACOTAR and was sick of waiting, is what allegedly Caitlin's told me. And I believe anything Caitlin says. So
you should not.
I'm kidding. But did you guys have a book hangover from this book?
The only reason I didn't is because book two was out. So I picked it up immediately. Right. But you better believe,
because I had too many other books to read for this podcast.
You better believe for like a good 30 minutes after I finished this book, I just, like the reviews are saying, I hugged my phone to my chest, I stared at the wall, and I cried. And I was also angry. Like, this book is my first heartbreak. It broke my heart. So no, but in a different world, I definitely would have.
So I had the fortunate privilege to read this book on a vacation. So actually, this is the last book I read on vacation, even though it was at the first part of my vacation. So I technically did have a book hangover where I didn't read any other books because this book was like too good. And I was like, no other book compares. If I start a book, I'm just going to be mad at it because it's not The Serpent of the Wings of Night. Mm-hmm. So I kind of did have a little bit of a book hangover and was very anxiously awaiting book two.
Yeah. It's good, guys. Like, please join us. I think we need to just start, like, we need to be the leaders of two different cults now, the SJM cult and now, like, the Serpent and the Wings of Night cult. And, like, everyone come join our little group and talk about it with us. And
we need to join forces and make it one large cult.
Yes. And we will be doing an episode over book two at some point because I have a lot to say.
Oh my God, it's Misha.
It's Misha?
Misha? Okay. At least
it is Araya.
Araya, okay.
Araya.
And it is the Kajari.
Kajari, okay.
Okay. Okay, sorry. I got very distracted. Unless I was sort of listening.
Yeah. Well, I think that's our discussion. So good time to tune back in. Rate and review the podcast. Find us on social. We're at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And we want you to join in on the conversation. If we said something that deeply offended your little bookish soul, please let us know. We love debating. We love hearing more. So yeah, hit us up.
Let us know if you want us to post the picture of Casey crying.
Stop. No. No.
How many listens and you'll let us post it?
No, oh my God. If we get 1 million listens, we can post it. But I'm not doing it for anything less than 1 million. So
girl, we all have access.
No, I'm changing the password. I'm kicking y'all off the Insta.
Business suite.
Yeah. You can't
You're
stop
doomed.
Us.
Whatever. Whatever. Don't listen.
Coming soon, a new cover to our podcast, Casey crying in bed with peaches.
Yeah, with my dog frantically being like, are you okay? I don't understand.
You did not look okay, so.
I was unwell. New social media challenge, post your face after reading this book.
Follow at Busy Girls Pod if you want to see this picture.
I want to see everyone's pictures, so please do so.
Yeah, I'm going to kill y'all.
Let's make a TikTok trend before and after reading the end of Serpent in the Wings of Night.
Okay, yes. That would actually be pretty funny.
Okay, well, I have the TikTok account password, so I definitely can do that.
Yes!
Whatever. You can't get me to do a before video. We'll see.
I'll just take a photo of you from Instagram.
Okay, coming soon on that note. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.